Chapter 20. Of 20-odd years of married life. But then he does not hear, nor understand, and his hand, of course, has no strength. We do not want him to hear tonight. No, assented Mrs. Elmayer, energetically, but in a cautiously subdued voice. If he hears, he will kill. Babalichai looked incredulous. Ha, Itun, you may believe me. Have I not lived many years with that man? Have I not seen death in that man's eyes more than once when I was younger, and he guessed at many things? Had he been a man of my own people, I would not have seen such a look twice. But he, with a contemptuous gesture, she seemed to fling unutterable scorn on Almayer's weak-minded aversion to sudden bloodshed. If he has the wish, but not the strength, then what do we fear? Asked Babalichai, after a short silence during which they both listened to Almayer's loud talk till it subsided into the murmur of general conversation. What do we fear? Repeated Babalichai again. To keep the daughter whom he loves, he would strike into your heart and mine without hesitation, said Mrs. Elmayer. And the girl is gone, he will be like the devil unchained. Then you and I had better beware. I am an old man and fear not death, answered Babalichai, with a mendacious assumption of indifference. But what will you do? I am an old woman, and wish to live, retorted Mrs. Elmayer. She is my daughter also. I shall seek safety at the feet of our Raja, speaking in the name of the past, when we both were young, and he, Babalichai, raised his hand. Enough. You shall be protected, he said soothingly. Again the sound of Almayer's voice was heard, and again interrupting their talk, they listened to the confused but loud utterance coming in bursts of unequal strength, with unexpected pauses and noisy repetitions, that made some words and sentences fall clear and distinct on their ears out of the meaningless jumble of excited shoutings emphasized by the thumping of Almayer's fist upon the table. On the short intervals of silence, the high complaining note of tumblers, standing close together and vibrating to the shock, lingered, growing fainter, till it leapt up again into tumultuous ringing, when a new idea started a new rush of words, and brought down the heavy hand again. At last the quarrelsome shouting ceased, and the thin plaint of disturbed glass died away into reluctant quietude. Babalichai and Mrs. Elmayer had listened curiously, their bodies bent and their ears turned towards the passage. At every louder shout they nodded at each other with a ridiculous affectation of scandalized propriety, and they remained in the same attitude for some time after the noise had ceased. This is the devil of jinn, whispered Mrs. Elmayer. S. He talks like that sometimes, when there is nobody to hear him. What does he say? Inquired Babalichai, eagerly. Who ought to understand? I have forgotten their talk. A little I understood. He spoke without any respect of the white ruler in Batavia, and of protection, and said he had been wronged. He said that several times. More I did not understand. Listen. Again he speaks. See. 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 Clicked Babalichai, trying to appear shocked, but with a joyous twinkle of his solitary eye. Here will be great trouble between those white men. I will go round now and see. You tell your daughter that there is a sudden and a long journey before her, with much glory and splendor at the end. And tell her that Dane must go, or he must die, and that he will not go alone. No, he will not go alone, slowly repeated Mrs. Elmayer, with a thoughtful air, as she crept into the passage after seeing Babalichai disappear round the corner of the house. The statesman of Sambor, under the impulse of vivid curiosity, made his way quickly to the front of the house, but once there he moved slowly and cautiously as he crept step by step up the stairs of the veranda. On the highest step he sat down quietly, his feet on the steps below, ready for flight should his presence prove unwelcome. He felt pretty safe so. The table stood nearly endways to him, and he saw Almayer's back. At Nina he looked full face, and had a side view of both officers. But of the four persons sitting at the table, only Nina and the younger officer noticed his noiseless arrival. The momentary dropping of Nina's eyelids acknowledged Babalatchi's presence. She then spoke at once to the young sub, who turned towards her with attentive alacrity, but her gaze was fastened steadily on her father's face, while Elmayer was speaking uproariously. Disloyalty and unscrupulousness. What have you ever done to make me loyal? You have no grip on this country. I had to take care of myself, and when I asked for protection I was met with threats and contempt, and had Arab slander thrown in my face. I, a white man. Don't be violent, Elmayer, remonstrated the lieutenant. I have heard all this already. Then why do you talk to me about scruples? I wanted money, and I gave powder in exchange. How could I know that some of your wretched men were going to be blown up? Scruples. Pah! He groped unsteadily amongst the bottles, trying one after another, grumbling to himself the while. No more wine, he muttered discontentedly. You have had enough, Elmayer, said the lieutenant, as he lighted a cigar. Is it not time to deliver to us your prisoner? I take it, you have that Dane Marula stowed away safely somewhere. Still, we had better get that business over, and then we shall have more drink. Come. Don't look at me like this. Elmayer was staring with stony eyes, his trembling fingers fumbling about his throat. Gold, he said with difficulty. A hand on the windpipe, you know. Sure you will excuse. I wanted to say a little gold for a little powder. What's that? I know, said the lieutenant soothingly. No. You don't know. Not one of you knows, shouted Elmayer. The government is a fool, I tell you. Heaps of gold. I am the man that knows. I and another one. But he won't speak. He checked himself with a feeble smile, and, making an unsuccessful attempt to pat the officer on the shoulder, knocked over a couple of empty bottles. Personally, you are a fine fellow, he said very distinctly, in a patronizing manner. His head nodded drowsily as he sat muttering to himself. The two officers looked at each other helplessly. This won't do, said the lieutenant, addressing his junior. Have the men mustered in the compound here. I must get some sense out of him. Hi, Elmayer. Wake up, man. Redeem your word. You gave your word. You gave your word of honor, you know. Elmayer shook off the officer's hand with impatience, but his ill humor vanished at once, and he looked up, putting his forefinger to the side of his nose. You are very young. There is time for all things, he said, with an air of great sagacity. The lieutenant turned towards Nina, who, leaning back in her chair, watched her father steadily. Really, I am very much distressed by all this for your sake, he exclaimed. Do not know, he went on, speaking with some embarrassment, whether I have any right to ask you anything, unless, perhaps, to withdraw from this painful scene, but I feel that I must for your father's good suggest that you should. I mean, if you have any influence over him, you ought to exert it now, to make him keep the promise he gave me, before he got into this state. He observed with discouragement that she seemed not to take any notice of what he said, sitting still with half-closed eyes. I trust, he began again. What is the promise you speak of? Abruptly asked Nina, leaving her seat and moving towards her father. Nothing that is not just and proper. He promised to deliver to us a man who in time of profound peace took the lives of innocent men, to escape the punishment he deserved for breaking the law. He planned his mischief on a large scale. It is not his fault if it failed, partially. Of course you have heard of Dane Marula. Your father secured him, I understand. We know he escaped up this river. Perhaps you and he killed white men, interrupted Nina. I regret to say they were white. Yes, two white men lost their lives through that scoundrel's freak. Two only, exclaimed Nina. The officer looked at her in amazement. Why, you, he stammered, confused. There might have been more, interrupted Nina. And when you get this scoundrel, will you go? The lieutenant, still speechless, bowed his assent. Then I would get him for you, if I had to seek him in a burning fire, she burst out with intense energy. Hate the sight of your white faces. I hate the sound of your gentle voices. That is the way you speak to women, dropping sweet words before any pretty face. I have heard your voices before. I hope to live here without seeing any other white face but this, she added in a gentler tone, touching lightly her father's cheek. Almayer ceased his mumbling, and opened his eyes. He caught hold of his daughter's hand, and pressed it to his face, while Nina with the other hand smoothed his rumpled gray hair, looking defiantly over her father's head at the officer, who had now regained his composure, and returned her look with a cool, steady stare. Below, in front of the veranda, they could hear the tramp of seamen mustering there according to orders. The sub-lieutenant came up the steps, while Babalichai stood up uneasily and, with finger on lip, tried to catch Nina's eye. You are a good girl, whispered Almayer, absently, dropping his daughter's hand. Father! Father! She cried, bending over him with passionate entreaty. See those two men looking at us. Send them away. I cannot bear it anymore. Send them away. Do what they want and let them go. She caught sight of Babalichai and ceased speaking suddenly, but her foot tapped the floor with rapid beats, in a paroxysm of nervous restlessness. The two officers stood close together looking on curiously. What has happened? What is the matter? Whispered the younger man. Don't know, answered the other, under his breath. He is furious, and the other is drunk. Not so drunk either. Queer, this. Look. Almayer had risen, holding onto his daughter's arm. He hesitated a moment, then he let go his hold, and lurched halfway across the veranda. There he pulled himself together, and stood very straight, breathing hard and glaring round angrily. Are the men ready? Asked the lieutenant. All ready, sir. Now, Mr. Almayer, lead the way, said the lieutenant. Almayer rested his eyes on him, as if he saw him for the first time. Two men, he said thickly. The effort of speaking seemed to interfere with his equilibrium. He took a quick step, to save himself from a fall, and remained swaying backwards and forwards. Two men, he began again, speaking with difficulty. Whoa, white men, men in uniform, honorable men. I want to say men of honor. Are you? Come. None of that, said the officer impatiently. Let us have that friend of yours. What do you think I am? Asked Almayer, fiercely. You are drunk, but not so drunk as not to know what you are doing. Enough of this tomfoolery, said the officer sternly, or I will have you put under arrest in your own house. Arrest? Laughed Almayer, discordantly. Eh? Ha! Ha! Arrest? Why, I have been trying to get out of this infernal place for 20 years, and I can't. You hear, man? I can't, and never shall. Never. He ended his words with a sob, and walked unsteadily down the stairs. When in the courtyard the lieutenant approached him, and took him by the arm. The sub-lieutenant and Babalichai followed close. That's better, Almayer, said the officer encouragingly. Here are you going to? There are only planks there. Here, he went on, shaking him slightly, do we want the boats? No, answered Almayer, viciously. Who want a grave? What? Wild again. Try to talk sense. Grave, roared Almayer, struggling to get himself free. Hole in the ground. Don't you understand? You must be drunk. Let me go. Let go, I tell you. He tore away from the officer's grasp, and reeled towards the planks, where the body lay under its white cover. Then he turned round quickly, and faced the semicircle of interested faces. The sun was sinking rapidly, throwing long shadows of house and trees over the courtyard. But the light lingered yet on the river, where the logs went drifting past in midstream, looking very distinct, and black in the pale red glow. The trunks of the trees in the forest on the east bank were lost in gloom, while there... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.